Thank you for downloading the PR Week, PR Week's weekly podcast. For more podcasts as well as breaking news, visit prweek.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the PR Week, PR Week's weekly podcast for everything going on in the worlds of PR and communications. My name is Frank Washcook. I'm the news editor at PR Week, and I have two special guests from our own staff who are here with me. Sean Czarnicki is here. Sean, how are you?
Very well.
Sean is our reporter covering corporate, and Allison Kansky is here. Allison, of course, covers healthcare and public affairs for PR Week. Allison, how are you?
I'm doing good.
Good, good. So we're going to talk about a few things today. We're going to talk about the PR Week Global Awards, which were last night in London, England. We're going to talk about the promotion of Barbara Bates to a global role at Hotwire. We're going to talk about a new face over at ProSec Partners, who's a veteran of the Trump campaign and transition team. We're going to talk about the big news this morning that happened on Twitter, which was President Trump threatening to cancel press briefings. And we're going to take a little bit of a look at Snapchat and both the business model and the model for the app itself. So without further ado, last night was the second annual PR Week Global Awards. It was in London, and kudos to a lot of our winners. Campaign of the Year went to Daughters of Mother India by Weber Shanwick. The Global In-House Team winner was the Financial Times. Global Agency of the Year was Weber Shanwick. Edelman was highly commended in that category, and as was Conan Wolfe. The Global Professional on the agency side was Barbie Siegel of Zeno Group, and highly commended was Pat Ford of Burson Marsteller. Lego won Global Brand. Has anybody seen any of the Lego movies?
I love them.
Saw Lego Batman.
Have you seen Lego Batman?
It was really good.
It's terrific. But yeah. It doesn't feel like an ad, does it?
No, not at all. It was actually really funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Will Arnett. Anyway, so back to business. International agency goes to Instinctive Partners, highly commended with Zeno Group, and Global Marketer. The winner is Steve Fund for Intel Corporation. Highly commended was Geraldine Kalbin for Hilton Worldwide. And again, that was a list of the top winners from the PR Week Global Awards Thursday night in London. So congratulations to all of them. Also, congratulations should go out to Barbara Bates, who is the new CEO of Hotwire. She, of course, replaces Brandon Craigie, who departed the agency about 3 months ago. She was the CEO of Eastwick, which was acquired about 7 months ago by Hotwire. So we will be keeping an eye on what she is bringing to the agency and how she changes things, if at all, over at Hotwire. So congrats to her. Sean, tell us a little bit about somebody new at ProSec Partners, Chris Byrne.
Yeah, Chris Byrne was a communication advisor for the Trump campaign and the Trump transition team. He was brought on. He was asked to join the campaign by Jason Miller sometime in August, I believe. Anyways, Jason Miller, of course, now has a role over at Teneo. Chris Byrne is just the latest Trump staffer to join the private sector. If you look over at what's happening over at Mercury seemed to be tooling up for a Trump aide. They brought on Brian Lanza and Tony Fabrizio. Fabrizio was a Republican pollster. Brian Lanza was also on the communications team. And Chris Byrne, prior to joining the campaign, was a senior producer over at Hannity. But prior to that, he was a special assistant to Dana Perino, who is White House spokesperson, of course, White House press secretary, I should say, for George W. Bush.
In calmer times, you could say.
In calmer times, yeah.
Really, and we'll be coming back to that in a minute. But you got a chance to talk with Dana Perino for a few minutes, who is, we should point out now, kind of auditioning, many people think, for Bill O'Reilly's old job with Fox News. What did she have to say?
Oh, no, yeah, like, we exchanged emails. Okay. She just told me a little bit about Chris's background over at the White House, and basically just had nothing but great things to say, of course. I would not imagine that she'd have anything else to say. But, yeah, she just wanted to wish him the best of luck and said that he's going to do well wherever he's going to go.
Mm-hmm. And he was in President Bush's administration from 2005 to 2009, so really from the second term until the end. Yeah, you have to think that must have been, even though, like we're joking, it was calmer times, but I'm sure it was an incredibly busy time. and then got to see the other side of the fence over at Hannity. So interesting career, and a pretty young guy who's had a pretty interesting career,
yeah,
right?
And yeah, this is just, again, to emphasize what's happening with ProSec. ProSec has had a pretty impressive year in terms of revenue growth. They acquired Mirrorfield Partners last year, and it looks like they wanted to bring on Chris to sort of navigate the new environment, I guess, over at Washington, D.C., created by Trump himself.
All right. Well, speaking of the elephant in the room, so it's been a busy morning on Twitter for the president, who, of course, right after I filed my story this morning, started tweeting, number one, threatening James Comey, the former FBI director who was unceremoniously fired. A lot happened this week on Tuesday. Sort of insinuating that Comey may have been taped without his knowledge at one point. As we know, there's a history in this country of...
Tapes isn't scare quotes.
Yeah.
Though.
Well, that's right. Tapes wasn't scare quotes.
Air quotes.
Which, as we were discussing before the podcast, might mean a number of things. One, that he's just not using quotes properly. Or two, that it's some other kind of taping device, right? You would think after Nixon that presidents would know not to just tape people in the Oval Office, but
maybe he actually taped him with scotch tape.
That could be. Maybe he stuck a piece of tape on him as he walked away. Yeah. We don't know.
Like a sign on his back?
We don't know. But more relevant to our audience is that in the latest in the string of tweets, he threatened to cancel press briefings. Now, you guys have both sort of covered the art of press briefings, and especially since the election. What do you recall a couple months ago when there was a lot of discussion about how a Trump media operation would run? And you guys both talked to people that have been in the White House briefing room a lot. What did they say back then?
Initially, when I talked to Sean Spicer about 2 months ago, it feels more like six, but about 2 months ago, Sean Spicer was basically saying that they planned to keep everything running pretty much modus operandi. Everything was going to stay normal. He was going to somehow handle being communications director and White House press secretary. Mm-hmm. That did not turn out to be true.
Right.
But basically, they said everything would be running normally. They would try to keep it as it was. And if there was going to be any changes, it wouldn't be completely out of the ordinary. Again, the White House press pool is not a fixture within the Constitution. It's just mm-hmm. a tradition that we sort of respect. I think that it was Greg Jenkins that said, or maybe somebody else, I can't remember, but you have all the world's most powerful media organizations in a White House press briefing room right there. That is a microcosm of the media. And if you want to kick a hornet's nest, then you try to take away that very, very special privilege. So I don't know what's going to happen. I doubt that he's going to.
Now, we should note, though, that when you were talking to Spicer about this and when you talked to Greg Jenkins for this story, this was before the president was inaugurated.
Yes.
Because this brings up the best laid plans problem that, you know, that they thought all of these things were going to go and be normal and all this. And then, you know, Trump's first full day in office, there are the huge protests and there's the... Now much parodied, you know, Spicer screams at everybody in the briefing room for 5 minutes thing. And that changes everything. So, you know, it's interesting. They may have planned for that, but it didn't quite turn out that way, did it?
Nope. Always a big learning curve when you get in the White House.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, Allison, what has been your take on this when you've talked to people about this issue?
Yeah, I think something important to remember is, I guess it was March or April when they kind of barred a couple news outlets from like a private briefing, and everybody kind of freaked out over that. So I think if they were to ever try to take away press briefings, I don't think anybody would stand for it. But in general, I think basically what Sean was saying, how they had this plan to do everything so well and keep the press briefings the same way, but they started off on such a bad foot with that first press briefing about the inauguration.
Quote unquote
crowd size.
Briefing. And yeah, that would be true. Using quotes properly.
Yes.
So I do think there is a question, though, about just how useful they are nowadays. So if you have a situation like this week where it turns out that a lot of people in the media are just basically being lied to from the podium about what happened with the Comey firing and what didn't happen, or, you know, what was the impetus for it. I think it brings up the question of just how useful these briefings are.
And the journalists, too, like the journalists that we've talked to, none of them are particularly threatened. But I mean, they dislike the idea of getting rid of the press briefing because it is such a tradition. It's the direct link between the president and the rest of the world. All the journalists I've talked to have not been wringing their hands wondering where they're going to get their stories. This White House is not going to stop leaking.
Right. And, you know, according to The Hill this morning, the leaks have actually increased in the past week because of the way that the Comey situation was handled. And as we all know, just because somebody doesn't want to comment or hold a press conference, that doesn't mean a story stops happening. So, and we should point out that as we speak right now, Melissa McCarthy is in traffic in Midtown, riding around on a podium. In preparation for Saturday's Saturday Night Live taping, which yes. I'm sure everybody will be talking about on Monday.
Yeah, please go watch that video. It's very funny.
It is a funny video. Okay, so somebody who also did not have a great week, or I should say a company that did not have a great week, was Snapchat. And their earnings were not great. Sean, tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, Wall Street did not react well to Snap's earnings. They fell short of expectations for user growth and revenue growth. This does bring it into pretty sharp focus about what sort of metrics we should be using for social media companies. Because if you look at the metrics that sort of Snap prides itself on, the quote-unquote stickiness of a social media platform, they raise the bar in a lot of aspects, except for the amount of time spent on the platform, which is occupied by Facebook, which is about 50 minutes a day. But 50 minutes a day.
Sure, not 15.
50.
These millennials are out there spending 50 minutes of their day on Snapchat.
It is a multi-generational platform, though, so that is interesting.
Maybe. Some more than others. Anyway.
And, Snapchat is a really interesting platform. You have Discover, which seems sort of like a Garden of Eden for a lot of marketers. It gives you a lot of interesting ideas for content. You have Stories. You have our story, the global live story, or whatever you want to call it. So basically what I'm hearing from a lot of different marketers, from journalists, is that they don't think that marketers are going to stop using the platform because of this earnings report. Like, Wall Street's reaction doesn't affect them. Mm. The audience is still there. The platform is still there. It still has a really strong personality and brand. So those factors far outweigh what they think about the earnings report. Mm.
Yeah, I do wonder, though, if it will become a drag like Twitter's earnings did eventually, where it just generated so much bad news on its own. And I guess that's something we're going to have to wait, you know, a number of months and a year to actually see. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's a question of that creates its own bad publicity months after month. Allison, you are a Snapchat user.
Yes.
Tell us what that's like.
Well, I have to say Snapchat is by far the slowest app to open on the face of this planet.
Okay.
You tap it and you wait like a good 5 seconds before it's usable.
So full disclosure, I experimented with Snapchat and I tried to use it and I just found it very confusing.
Yeah. I don't know how to describe Snapchat.
The functionality is very different.
It is. You have to like know how to use it because it pops up and it has the camera already up and you're like, oh my god, like sometimes it's looking at your face and you get kind of weirded out because suddenly you're taking a selfie.
Just spinach in your teeth.
Yeah. But I honestly never ever use the like Discover or mm-hmm. like the news section of mm-hmm. it. Like I use it to like, because I live far away from my like friends and family, I use it to like send pictures to them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So when do you notice that a brand is, we'll call it advertising for lack of a better term, but marketing to you on Snapchat? I mean, have you ever noticed any like standout activations or anything like that?
I don't know. The most marketing I see is they put little 10-second ads when you're watching like a list of stories.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll play a story and it'll play like whatever your friend is doing. And then at the end of that, it'll have like a 10-second ad.
Mm-hmm.
But you can just tap the screen and get it to go away.
Mm-hmm.
And I do that every time.
Do you find it annoying?
It's extremely annoying.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because mostly I'm doing it so I can see my friends, not see an ad.
Right.
There was one interesting one that I saw from an article, from a blog from Sprinklr, which is a social media management company. And anyways, during the U.S. Open, Gatorade rolled out an 8-bit video game.
Golf U.S. Open or the tennis?
Tennis, where you could play as Serena Williams.
Okay.
And apparently that got shared by 35% of users, and they spent up to 3 minutes on the video game. So that's pretty effective.
Interesting. That is interesting. It's something to keep an eye on. They're losing a lot of money, and they lost a lot of money the most recent quarter. But the reason for that as we were talking about yesterday, Sean, was that the bonuses were so high for executives in that quarter. So we'll be keeping an eye on it. Okay, folks, that's about all the time we have this week for the PR Week podcast. Thanks for joining us, and we will be back with you next week.